You know, a person's first reaction to finding out that they're in an organization which is being watched is, well, why are they watching us? I mean, we're not doing anything illegal, which is true. We weren't and we're not. And of course they have to understand why, and people have to explain it to them. You know, why is the state, you know, paying so much attention to an organization whose work is, you know, is public work? And when you get into that, you get into the whole area of what is a state that looks like it's free, unquote, but in fact is extremely repressive.
Welcome to Circle A Radio. Tonight we'll be looking at the history of U.S. government's domestic surveillance programs. The recent cases of the National Security Agency spying on American citizens have now gained widespread media coverage. We're not hearing a lot about other types of intimidation. We'll be speaking with Lauren Regan from the Civil Liberties Defense Center in Eugene, Oregon, about how grand juries work and their role in repression. We'll also be speaking with Professor Brian Glick, author of The War at Home, Covert Action Against U.S. Activists and What We Can Do About It. First, we bring you some voices, past and present, of people who are intimately familiar with these tactics. This is former Black Panther Party member and Portland resident Kent Ford.
And I got a call from a friend, and I hadn't heard from this friend for 25 years. But he says, Kent, this is the worst I've ever seen it. He said, even during our day, back in the SNCC days and the Black Panther days, he said, it wasn't this bad. I said, you're certainly right.
If the political repression activists face is worse now than it's ever been, we need to look at the past for lessons learned and for parallels to our current struggles. We put together the following history lesson in an effort to connect the past to the present. Some of the historical material came from a documentary called Me and My Shadow, a history of the FBI's covert operations and COINTELPRO. It was narrated by Don Sorda and produced by Addie Gevins for Pacifica Radio in 1976.
Do you ever get the feeling you are being watched? If you are active in any organization on the left, you probably are.
In 1791, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, or the Bill of Rights, provided legal protection of basic civil rights. Civil liberties guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution included freedom of speech, of the press, and of assembly. The Constitution provided citizens protection from unreasonable search and seizure. In 1798 marked the passing of the Alien and Sedition Acts. These acts were created in part to silence government critics. They granted the president the power to imprison or deport any alien suspected of sedition, and its wide-ranging restrictions of spoken criticism against the government or the president. The Sedition Act significantly reduced First Amendment protections of speech and of the press. During the period between 1860 and 1865, the first violations of First Amendment protections were documented during the Civil War. During wartime paranoia, the U.S. government censored telegraph communications and punished journalists for publishing opinion editorial pieces. Newspapers critical of the Lincoln administration were banned from the mail. In 1962, Lincoln established military tribunals. Any U.S. citizen accused of resisting military drafts or guilty of giving aid and comfort to the rebels would be tried under military law. Hundreds of civilians were arrested and tried in military tribunals. Thus, they were denied the constitutional protection of trial by jury in a civilian court. With the entry of the United States into World War I, the government became increasingly concerned about rising anti-war sentiment by the labor and radical movements. Organized labor was lobbying for their right to collective bargaining, as well as reduced working hours and better working conditions. By order of the War Department, police were authorized to repress any activities committed under the term seditious intent. The government stepped up its campaign of repression against activists and foreign immigrants. In 1917, Congress passed the Espionage Act. It prescribed a $10,000 fine and 20 years imprisonment for interfering with recruitment of troops or the disclosure of information dealing with national defense. Criticized as unconstitutional, the act resulted in the imprisonment of many in the anti-war movement, including Eugene V. Debs, Max Eastman, and Emma Goldman. In 1918, the Sedition Act was further refined to make it illegal to criticize the war effort in almost any manner.
This is David Cole, a professor at Georgetown University Law Center and legal affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine.
In 1919, there were a series of terrorist bombings in the United States, including mail bombs that were delivered to one of the chief justices of the Supreme Court, to several senators, including a person who blew off the front of the home of Attorney General A. Mitchell Palmer in Georgetown in Washington, D.C. And the government responded at that time not by going out and capturing the bombers. They never found the bombers. Instead, they went out and picked up somewhere between 4,000 and 10,000 foreign nationals using immigration authority, locked them up, interrogated them incommunicado, and ultimately deported hundreds of them, not based on involvement in terrorism, not based on involvement in the bombing, but based on either pretextual immigration charges, overstaying visas, or political association with the Communist Party or some communist organization.
These raids took place in several American cities and became known as the Palmer Raids.
And they used immigration law at the time because they could. Not because they thought the bombers were immigrants, but because the laws permitted them to do to foreign nationals what they couldn't do to citizens, to employ guilt by association, to hold people without showing them the evidence against them. And the architect of that was not Attorney General A. Mitchell Palmer, but a young man just out of George Washington Law School, whose first job in the Justice Department had been regulating enemy aliens during World War I, and whose second job was heading up the Radical Alien Division of the Justice Department. And that man was J. Edgar Hoover.
Me and my shadow strolling down the
The legal scope of FBI operations has been increasing since its formation in 1924. Political surveillance is handled by the Bureau's Domestic Intelligence Division, which dates its authority from 1939, when President Franklin Delano Roosevelt ordered the FBI to investigate matters relating to espionage and sabotage. So long as J. Edgar Hoover and his successors to the directorship could convince the legislature that the government is in imminent danger of communist subversion, funds could be obtained for extensive programs of domestic surveillance. Programs which are subject to only the most minimal review by elected representatives of the people.
After the December 7, 1941 Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, President Franklin Roosevelt delegated military authority to sign Executive Order 9066, which culminated in the internment of ethnic Japanese from West Coast communities. After the Second World War ended, the Cold War began. Between 1947 and 1954, the House Un-American Activities Committee, or HUAC, had been officially established. Its purpose was threefold. First, it intended to prove that the Hollywood Screenwriters Guild had communist members. Second, it hoped to show